Blog Talk Radio.
I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have.
Well, welcome to today's episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I am your host, Tina Gaudio-Grave, along with my co-host, Jennifer Carter. Today is January 20th, 2009, a very historic day for us here in the U.S. And I'd just like to welcome everybody to the call. I'm calling in today live from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do every Tuesday at noon Eastern for Relationship Marketing 101. Well, Jen, you didn't know that? I'm trying to get to unmute you, so give me a second to get there. And the reason it's such a historic day for us here in the U.S. is because of the inauguration taking place literally as we speak today. Having some issues with the control panel, so just bear with me and I'll get Jennifer unmuted and a couple others. It's a really neat day. As one of the co-founders of 10 Million Clicks for Peace, it's a day that we've been having a lot of discussions about. A day that we've been waiting for months now. And as you hear in the news so often, it's a time of change when change is in the air. And it's kind of a day of hope in a lot of ways, simply because it's such a day of change. Bear with me while I try and get in to get some others unmuted. It's going to take another second, it looks like. And as I do that, what I want to talk about today is talking about the topic of change. Because change is a big deal when it comes to building your business. You've got to start with the whole idea of, okay, it's time to make a change first. And then go into the idea of how do we go from here to someplace that we want to be and try to really inspire you to make a change in your life so that you can go on to grow and build your business. Okay, I think I'm getting to that control panel. Yay! Let's see if we can get Jen up. Are you there, Jennifer?
Hey, Gina, Serum, can you hear me?
I can.
Hey,
boy.
Fantastic, fantastic. Hey, happy Inauguration Day.
Yay! Being from Chicago myself, I was raised in Chicago, born in Cleveland. Having this new president coming in from Chicago, it's the first president ever from Chicago. Yes, we've had a few from Illinois generally, but never one from Chicago. And because of the fact that when I was back in law school, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I was one of the head editors of our law review at the same time that Barack Obama was the head editor in the Harvard Law Review. And we actually worked on a project together. So just that whole history makes this day even more meaningful for me, and it makes me want to go out and do something. I don't know what, but something different. Take some bigger responsibility. Take some bigger action. Are you feeling that way too?
You know, absolutely. It's funny you say that. He, of course, has been stressing that we all, meaning all of us Americans, not just Congress, not just our new president, need to take more personal responsibility, not only for ourselves, but for our community and for our country. And if you saw Oprah the other day, well, I didn't see it, but I saw it on her website. She, of course, I think has been for hope, about hope and change for a long time. And she had a lot of people, well-known and unwell-known alike, but she's there in the Capitol, and she's in telling people, look, go out there and do something with this. Be a part of making a change. And so there were stories of a lot of different people saying, yeah, okay, I'm not just going to let it be words. I'm going to let it be action. And you see a lot of big stars going out there, going into schools, going into other projects to, yes, Gina, to do something, to make a bigger difference, and to not only contribute, but to contribute in a way that ignites some kind of change for the better in the community.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the way that I see it is this. you know, you've heard me say this before, but it's worth saying again. I look at everything as being a privilege. We are privileged to be able to be a part of this change. And it really is a privilege. It's not something we have to do. It's not even something we want to do. We're privileged to be able to be a part of it. And I think if we all really look at it as it is a privilege, it will more than likely inspire us to do more. And in terms of relationship marketing, that's a big deal because if we look at every individual who is an entrepreneur, who's out there building a business of some sort, if every single one of those millions and millions of entrepreneurs really did just one small thing to cause change to occur, to help make the world a better place to live, we could actually live in a world that was an idea. It doesn't take a lot. It just takes each one of us banding together to do one small thing. That's huge.
And to do what you said earlier is to be grateful for what we do have and to take advantage of our situations no matter what it is, even if it's not so pretty. Can I share a story with you, a brief story?
Please do.
Okay, perfect. So my daughter, I have a now 8-year-old daughter, who sometimes she's been having some bullying issues. Not bad, but every once in a while somebody will pick on her in a way, and I try and get her to stand up for herself. And she's not the type to be mean, so when somebody else is malicious, she kind of doesn't get it. How could somebody do that? And it's not fair, and of course I'm not going to hit them back. And so we deal with this. We talk about this and work through this sometimes. Well, last night, we have a lot of biography books that we read, and last night we were reading Rosa Parks, a biography about Rosa Parks and when she was a little girl. And there was this story of her as a little girl, which must have been in the early 1900s, don't remember the date, but where some white boy was picking on her, and she stood up, and she was so proud of herself, she stood up to him. When she got home, she got in trouble by her mama and her grandma for standing up to this little white boy, because at that time, if you did that, it could bring tremendous consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
So Jamie and I were talking about this. My daughter is half black, half white, and we were talking about this and saying, can you imagine living in a time where we didn't even have some people, I'm white, so I can't say that, but didn't have the right to stand up for ourselves without tremendous consequences. Well, now we live in a time where certainly there's still inequities and inequalities all around. However, it's a very different era where we can stand up for ourselves, and it's a very different era where there is all kinds of possibilities that didn't used to exist. And today, with the inauguration of Obama coming, what is it, 40 years after the death of Martin Luther? Well, we'll say about 40 years, 45?
It's a little over that, right.
Okay, so with, the civil rights, it's interesting. The inauguration comes a day after Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Also, who, was a force of major, major change. He, as well as all of the hundreds of thousands, probably millions of other people who collaborated with him to say, yes, we can. Yes, we can make a change. And bring it back to today's inauguration, of course, Obama being in the White House, it's not just about race. It's about so much more. But what's interesting and fun about it is that you see so much of the country, so many people coming together, even those who maybe didn't vote for him, saying, we have some challenges in our country right now, but we also have possibilities, and we can take this. We can take this time of there's some uncertainty about, the economy and some other things going on, but at the same time, it's also, it's a chance to start anew. It's a chance to take a fresh perspective and say, hey, what responsibility do I as an individual, do I as a family, as my community, as whatever groups we belong to, what responsibilities do we have to make the situation better and to inspire change for the better? So it's such an interesting, hope-filled time where if we want to, we can seize it and make a big, big difference.
Absolutely. And one of the topics that I talk about quite often, I don't think we really talked about it very much on this show, is the whole concept of being a social entrepreneur. Do you think we've talked about it on the show? I don't think we have.
Not really. Nope. We have not gone into detail about that. So let's talk about being. What do you want to talk about with as a social entrepreneur? What do you mean by that, Gina?
Well, being a social entrepreneur is using your business to affect change in some way. Many people that I deal with and that I know personally, I'm good friends with, call themselves serial social entrepreneurs, meaning that they have built business after business after business, not just to gain profit from it, but to really use it to do something bigger, to really make a difference in some way, shape, or form. And every one of those social entrepreneurs that I know has said the exact same thing. When they've built businesses to intentionally help make the world a better place, it's actually caused the business to profit in bigger ways. And I'm not talking about setting up businesses that become charities and nonprofit organizations. I'm talking about ordinary businesses that on their face are not there to do something charitable or something philanthropic, but are businesses that look on their face to be businesses set up for profit, but somehow affect lives in some way. You introduced me recently, or reintroduced me, I should say, to Zabiba from HealingBridges.com. And Zabiba would be a good example of a social entrepreneur. She is an author, has a book by the same name, Healing Bridges. She's recently introduced a line of clothing, all of it for profit. The profit, however, will be used to help make a difference back in her country in Africa, where there are hundreds of thousands of refugees in camps all over the place because of the war and the strife going on over there. Now, that business is a little closer to being more of a charitable organization. In fact, there is a charitable organization that's a part of it. But it started out with authoring a book. And it starts out with good entrepreneurial principles. Other friends that I have, like Ben Mack, Ben Mack's goal is to bring potable drinking water to every human being on this planet. He plans on using his business to help make that possible. And he often talks about entrepreneurs really making a difference by helping bring drinking water to every human being on this planet. Again, is Ben's business a charity? Absolutely not. But yet, it still is a business that really does have a social purpose behind it. One of my students has a really interesting, unique business. He is, I can never think of a word, an agronomist, which is someone who studies the economy of agriculture. He's developed a way to create biodiesel from a plant that is not an edible food source, so it doesn't cost us in terms of food. It's a plant that is grown just for purposes of creating biodiesel. He's created a system for growing it that has to be done in tropical climates, places like Africa or somewhere really warm and wet, that will not only allow us to solve the world's fuel problems, but also help to create communities around these crops of plants that grow fuel. And it is a really unique concept because it truly can help people who are at war because there is no food, there is no money, there is no shelter, who don't have the basic needs to sustain their lives, and turn them into socialized communities who have homes, who have plenty of food, who have all the resources that they need, and it's a for-profit business at the same time. Talk about a wow. In fact, the business plan has him making like eight to ten figures in the next 3 years per year. That's huge. And yet it is a social entrepreneurial endeavor. So there are lots of different examples that are out there of people being social entrepreneurs. It's a matter of including in your long-term goals something that you want to do to make a difference. Even something as small as what was done back where I used to live in Crown Point, Indiana. We had a little breakfast place that was a little pancake house. And they had one special meal that it was their specialty. It was this great apple pancake. Oh, it was fantastic. For every apple pancake that was purchased, they gave $1 to a local charitable organization. And every month, they would alternate what charity got the money. And when you would go in, if you ordered one of these meals, you could vote on what charity would get the money that month.
Oh, wow.
And each month, they would rotate it. Well, you'd say one little restaurant, how much could they donate? How much difference could they make? Believe it or not, between $5,000 and $10,000 a month to one little organization.
Wow.
Well, that's huge. Just to give you an example of how huge that really is, one of my friends had a daughter who turned 16 a couple of years ago. This girl was turning 16 along with three of her best friends the same week. They all decided that for their sweet 16th birthdays, they wanted to do something that would make a difference. They weren't sure how to go about it. They weren't sure what they could do. But they knew they wanted something to commemorate what they thought of as a special day in their life. Well, her dad helped them write a novel together. They sold the novel from the internet, raised thousands of dollars. They told all of their friends and all of their family, look, we don't want parties, we don't want gifts. Give us money that we're going to use to make a difference. They took the profits of the book, they took all of the gifts that they got. They used them to contribute mosquito netting to people in third world countries, places where without mosquito nets, people would be dying from malaria and all kinds of other things. They were able to buy mosquito nets for an entire village of 50,000 from just what they would get from a sweet 16 party for four people.
Wow.
That's huge, right?
Girls. Yeah, yeah.
So how much difference can you make with a couple thousand dollars? A lot. Within the 10 million clicks for peace organization, we're really excited because we have a way to measure the impact on change that you can make personally. We have something we call your peace impact meter. I did a teleconference October 24th of last year, a year before, 2007. On that call, I had 80 people. Showed those 80 people how to put a little baby ribbon ad up in the corner of their website. Kind of small, unobtrusive. You've seen it up on my site. It says, click here for peace. We call it our little yellow tag for peace. You'll find it at theiamuniversity.com. So October 24th, 2007, we show 80 people how to put that little yellow tag for peace up. Other than those 80 people, we did absolutely nothing else to get the word out about 10 million clicks for peace. Between October 24th, 2007, October 24th, 2008, the word about 10 million clicks for peace had spread 16 levels deep and was then bringing in more than $10,000 a month in donations.
Really?
Just from those 80 people.
Hmm.
So in order to make a difference, it doesn't take a lot of effort. It doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't even take a lot of money. It simply starts with the goal of making a difference and then putting some little piece into action that can allow you to become a part of the change. And if you really feel the privilege that you have of being able to be a part of that change, it will make you more likely to do something bigger. And as you're out there building relationships in your business, it's such a perfect opportunity to show that same thing to other people. Show them why they are why they have a privilege of being part of the change, and show them what to do. I think more people don't take action because they don't know what to do. And they just sit back and go, well, that sounds great, but I don't know what to do. They think of themselves as ordinary. They think of themselves as not being able to make a difference. They don't have millions of dollars. They don't have millions of followers that they can go out and talk to. They're not up on stage like President Obama is today, where they're being watched by the world. And they don't see how just one person can make a difference. It all starts with one person. And as you build these relationships in your business and you start touching the lives of even a few people, if you then show them how they can make a change that can really make the world a better place, pretty soon you will have a measurable impact. So that's where it all starts. Have you done anything in your own life to help affect change to make the world a better place to live, Jennifer?
Yes, and you said something a moment ago about having measurable a measurable effect. And what I want to submit or put out there is that, especially in our business, we want to make it something that has a measurable effect. At the same time, when we have our attention to make a difference for the better, I would submit that we're not always going to see or know what that change is, and that's okay. And I want to the case in point. First read about the concept in probably Chicken Soup for the Soul way back when story, and then I think they made a movie at some point, but some of you listening may have heard of the, you know, Pay It Forward. Which,
it's my favorite movie.
Fantastic. For those who hadn't, you know, read a story or listened to the movie, in the movie version, a little boy comes up, he has rough life, lots of things going on, comes up with this idea that if he helps three people in some way that's meaningful to them, without asking for acknowledgement or anything in return, and the only thing that he does ask is, listen, when you can, please help three more people. He did this whole big math thing and figured out, gosh, how many people it could affect.
And you had to be able to help those three people with nothing in it for you. You couldn't just help three people because you were going to get something out of it. You just had to help them unconditionally just because it was the right thing to do.
Absolutely, unconditionally making something of it. Except somewhere in there, the idea is for them to go out and again, help three other people. And initially, you know, teachers and whoever thought, well, you know, I don't see what this can possibly do. But what starts happening, as I'm sure all of us on, you know, listening today have seen before, is when you do something, help somebody else unconditionally, they're not expecting it. They need that help, whatever it is, whether it's a smile on a lousy day or some help in a much bigger way. It changes the way they feel. It changes the way they perceive themselves and maybe the way they go about their day. And it in turn changes sometimes dramatically the way that they go out and affect other people's lives on a day-to-day basis. So going back to measurable change versus immeasurable change, I've always done a lot with kids. I have a big affinity for kids. I just think they're great, and I have a lot of fun working with them or volunteering with them. And I used to be a big sister, you know, of that organization way back when, and I used to run this program, this internship program for youth. And at the time, you know, I did it, and it was a lot of fun, and then I moved on doing other things and just kind of thought, well, you know, that was it. But years later in this, you know, I'd run into these kids all the time who would, you know, say, and this surprised me because I thought my impact was small, and I stopped doing that particular impact, but I ran into kids all the time who said, you know, Miss Jennifer, guess what? You know, I'm in college now. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And you know, you inspired me, or you kept me going, or you whatever. And I didn't do a whole lot for any one individual, but every time one of these kids came up to me and would run into me as, you know, now young adults and say something like that, I realized, number one, I should have kept going more and stronger, because even the little things that we do, the little, hey, you can do it, hey, you're worthwhile, hey, here's how you can get a job, or here's how you can, whatever impact we make, it starts momentum. It can start momentum like a snowball rolling downhill of positive change and effect. And I've just sort of seen that when it doesn't always come back to you, but sometimes it does, you can see the impact that you've had. And for me, at least, it makes me realize, gosh, if I just do a little bit more, look at how many other people I can affect for the better. I can also...
Well, I got an email earlier this year
Yeah.
And the email was from a guy who said, you know, I've been wanting to write to you for a long time, just never got around to doing it. But I thought it was important that you know what effects you've had. And I'm going, what effects did I have? I didn't do anything. And I kept reading it going, I don't know this guy. I don't know what he's talking about. And on paragraph 10 going, I don't know what he's talking about. Well, it turned out that there was a boy who was 16 years old in the UK who was an orphan. He was living in an orphanage, and he wanted something better. And he somehow or another found some of my teachings on the Internet about 2 years ago. And it was originally it was with my Abundant Info Products book. He got together with a group of other kids within the orphanage, and they took what they had learned in my book and went out and started building businesses. These kids had now grown by earlier this year to a group of more than 1,000 boys who, through the businesses that they had started this group home for boys. And all of these boys that were living in this home, more than 1,000 of them, were all there learning about entrepreneurship, learning how to use the power of the Internet to build businesses, and all of them had the money they needed to be able to go on to college and make something of their lives, even though every one of them had been orphans. And this guy was just writing to tell me because he was like, you know, I don't think you know that you've touched so many lives. And I had no clue. I had absolutely no clue. And it really made me wonder, well, I wonder if there are any other groups like that that have occurred as a result of something I taught.
That's
quite possible. Did I do what I did just because I was expecting something like that? Absolutely not. In fact, quite the opposite. But if you do things in the right way with the right message to the right audience, that's when those kinds of things happen over and over and over again. Whether you can measure them or not makes no difference. They're still going to take place.
That's an amazing story, Gina, and my guess is that there's a lot more out there. And not just from that. I mean, you've got some really interesting, like, what do you call it, your miracle motivation package, which I remember you telling me and the rest of the mentee group way back when about it, and I thought that's a nice idea, and I kind of skimmed through it at first, but didn't really listen to it until much later. And what was interesting about listening to these to this miracle motivation thing was that the story that was within there, and it, you know, it was about your story and the challenges you went through and how you overcame it, but I didn't realize the kind of impact it could have on me and the people that I'm around, just because, gosh, it planted that seed of hope that you can overcome no matter what, in a way.
That's it.
I had no idea.
It's that seed of hope. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. And I think planting those seeds of hope all over, whenever, wherever we can, is hugely important.
And I know when I get stories back, like the story from this guy, or because of the Miracle Motivational Package, I've come into contact with people who have done equally amazing things. A guy who was deaf who was able to go on and start a business in the music field, of all things, as a deaf person. Huge, right? And this was a guy who had been living off of welfare because he thought that's all he could do. And it really changed his life. And I probably have another dozen or more stories from just that one product.
Wait.
But when I hear all those stories, it makes me want to go out and do more. It inspires me in ways that are so enormous. And I end up sitting down going, well, what could I do? And I start with the idea of, okay, what this is my end result. And I can't figure out what the end result is. It's so big. So when I start by saying, okay, we're not going to go there. We're not going to try and come up with this big thing. I'm going to try to change one life and change only one life and put a plan together for how I'm going to change one life. That's when I make a bigger difference. You don't have to start out with the idea of changing everybody or changing everything or making a difference for hundreds of thousands of people. You've got to start with an idea of making a change for one person. And because of Pay It Forward and those types of concepts, if you show that one person how to tell others about it, it's going to grow on its own. And if you've done the right things to serve your one person as best you possibly can, even if you don't tell that person to go tell others about it, it's going to happen anyway.
Yep, yep. There's a great commercial that some, I think it was an insurance company that put it on, did where they just showed somebody doing something unexpectedly nice. It might have been picking up a piece of trash, helping somebody cross the street, whatever it was, something that was that's uncommon that was nice. And the observer seeing this, and then the observer going and saying, gosh, you know, I should help somebody, and feeling good about it, and them helping somebody, and just, again, that effect going and going and going. So, right, it's not always intentional, but when you put that kind of, I want to help somebody, I want to make the world a better place, energy and effort out there, it can start, starts a snowball effect. And in fact, that's how so many big changes that have come about in this world that were good big changes, that's how they came about. One person said something needs to happen, a change needs to happen, and maybe it was an effort that started small, but people started picking up on the energy and the possibility that things can get better, whatever it is, the possibility. Much like, it sounds like those boys in the orphanage, whoever that original boy was who got a hold of your stuff.
And yeah.
I don't have to be a poor orphan. I can do a business and share it with his friends. Hey, friends, look, look at this. And that's amazing. You've got a bunch of young adults who are orphans who, you know, most people would think maybe wouldn't have as many high expectations because they don't have that support system that a lot of people do. But because of those seeds of hope and possibility planted by you, they said, yep, we can do it. And then other boys watched them. And again, that momentum just grew and grew. And who knows where that is today?
Exactly.
Can we see that?
And it was funny how he came to get his hands on my book, because even that really became part of the story. Dr. Manny, who's someone, he's out in India, he's a heart surgeon, but he's known for doing a lot of things to help make the world a better place, a lot to help children. Dr. Manny had offered a package that had a bunch of items that he gave away. And one of the things that I had included in there was a chapter from this book. And obviously, at the end of the book, there's then a little thing that lets people go and get the whole book if they want. That's how we do things, right? And in there, I had included a gift certificate that you could get the book for really cheap. I think it was like $7, and it usually sells for $27 or $37. And so this boy had been part of Dr. Manny's thing because he was a boy who had heart problems and was dealing with Dr. Manny to try and help get treatment on this heart condition that he had. Got his hands on my free report and only managed to scrape up the $7 by going to other people in the first place to be able to get the rest of the book. If you surround yourself and participate in programs that are designed by other people who are out there already making a difference in the world, and just get little baby pieces out that you totally give away for free, it's more likely that you're going to have more of these kinds of stories happening for you than if you just go out and try to do it all on your own.
That's right.
Right before, I decided to watch the inauguration today on WGN because it's a Chicago channel. And being from Chicago, I sometimes don't like news in general. So to turn on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, it's just not me. I try hard not to watch those channels at all. So I said, you know, WGN, at least it's from Chicago, I bet they won't have quite a newsy slant to the inauguration. So I turned it on early. And on the channel, there was a show called Seventh Heaven on. And I don't normally watch TV that early in the morning in the first place. And Seventh Heaven is a show that was on in the 90s. I just saw my first episode like 2 days ago. Didn't even know that the show existed until then. And I happened to catch the last 35, 40 minutes of it. What a neat show. It's actually made me want to go and see if I can find episodes on TV because it was such a neat show. Have you ever seen the program?
I sure have. Yep, I used to watch it sometimes with the kids. Yeah, good fun show with messages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about a couple. The guy's a pastor and a minister. They have, I think, 6 or 7 kids, if I'm not mistaken.
A large.
And it's all 11?
No, I said a large number. It,
yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So it's a story about the life of this family. And it appears that there are morals in every single one of the programs. Well, on this episode that happened right before the inauguration started this morning, one of the kids had gone off with one of her friends, and on the way home from school, they had decided that they were going to go explore their town because they had never done it. And they got a little tourist map. And when they picked it up, there's a little arrow that says, "You are here," and they plan their little route. Well, they managed to get themselves lost. 5 buses later, they're out of money, they're hungry, it's now late at night. The parents are worried to death because they don't know where their kids are. They never got home from school that day. The two of them get off of the last bus, don't have any money to go get on another bus, don't have a way to even call home. And as they start walking down the street, they see these 2 older black boys. And the little girl says to her friend, "Hey, I'm going to go ask those guys. Maybe they can help us. I've got a good feeling about them." And the little boy says, "Do you remember I told you I had a good feeling about the last 3 buses we were on, too? I don't want to do it. They look scary to me." And she's like, "No, I've got a really good feeling about it. I'm sure it's going to be fine." So she goes up and she introduces herself to these 2 boys, and she says, "And this is my friend so-and-so, and we're lost." And the 2 boys look at her, and they introduce themselves, and they say, and they call us the Lost Boys, and they start telling her the story. These were 2 boys, and they are really the 2 names that they were called in the story. I think it was Jacob, and I can't remember the other name, Nicodemus, maybe. And they're from the Sudan. Because of war in their country, one day they were out in the field, and they turn around, and their entire village is burning, and they hear bombs and guns, and it was just a totally scary situation, and everybody fled from the field, running away from the death. The boys ended up walking more than 1,000 miles, and initially they had started out with a crowd of boys, and people just kept dying on this journey. And eventually, they ended up coming to the U.S., where they were able to get into schools, they were able to start getting jobs, and these were relatively young boys. I don't think they were even 18 yet. But they saw it as such a huge thing that they were able to get jobs, because back in their country, they would have been dead. And the little girl says, "Well, where are your parents?" And they said, "We don't know. They may be alive somewhere in the world. They may have died in our village. We don't know. We've been separated from our friends and our family since we were 7 years old." And by the end of the story, there was a sermon by the dad at the very end where he was talking about, you know, the hope that he had for his family after talking to these 2 boys. And it was really a pitch for an organization called the Lost Boys Foundation, which you'll find at thelostboysfoundation.org. And just hearing the story, and at the end they had pictures that were from these 2 boys' real lives. And it started with their journey of 1,000 miles trying to flee to safety. And there's pictures of all of the kids, and then pictures of kids dying, and then pictures of them finally getting to a safe place, all the way on to pictures of them now in America and playing and being in school and them working. Talk about a tearjerker. It was such an inspiration. And hearing those kinds of stories really made me go, wow, why am I not doing more? But I think just hearing from what they said, they were thinking of it that quite the opposite way. They saw people in the world as doing so much. So there's you know, the two very drastically different points of view. Those who are being helped see the smallest amounts of help as being so much after having been through such devastating situations. And then there's people like me who sit there and go, why am I not doing more? I think where we all need to be is somewhere in between, where we're all doing something. If I felt like I had more people that I had touched who were out doing something positive, I think even then I wouldn't feel this need to do more. It's just that I see so much and I hear so many stories. I bet I have more than 18 projects on my desk right now from people who need help for some special need that all affect 50,000 or more lives. Well, it makes you want to go, well, I got to find a way to get to all 18 of them. When what I really need to do is show 18 people what to do and then have 18 people go and help these 18 organizations. And so from relationship standpoint, what I need to be doing is going out and building those 18 relationships with 18 people who can go out and help these 18 organizations. It's a matter of working your way backwards from that outcome. None of us can make that much of a difference. None of us can go out and tackle all of these big things because they're just too huge. That's why our world is in such a devastating condition today, is because everybody tries to tackle the big problem. If we try with just a smaller chunk of it and work our way backwards to putting a plan into place to teach others how to make that change possible, we can make a lot more things happen a lot faster.
And if we seek to influence enough people who will also want to in turn influence others, as you said, I need to go out and find 18 other people who can, you know, start or run or whatever 18 organizations, then you, Gina, instead of just helping 18 individuals, you've helped 18 people who are, will be responsible for helping tens, hundreds, maybe thousands of other people times 18.
Tens of thousands, actually probably hundreds of thousands.
Exactly. There is this wonderful, wonderful story of this woman I saw at this conference who did just that. She is from the country of Liberia, and her name is Seru Kona Garlo. And Miss Garlo has this amazing story, and it's long and in-depth, and I won't tell it all, but the neat part is this. So
say her name one more time.
Okay, her name is Seru Kona Garlo. She's from Liberia, and she's held a lot of titles there. One of the things that she is best known for, and this is perhaps one of the reasons why I saw her speaking at this women's conference, is during the Civil War in Liberia, there was a lot of terrible things going on in this civil war, warring between various factions. I don't know the names of them, but and it was just, it was awful. It was, you know, the description you were minutes ago from The Lost Boys. And she had determined, you know, enough is enough. We've been trying these other things. You know, the men keep fighting. Women in Liberia at that time certainly had very little right or ability to speak up. You know, it was very, women were second-class citizens. So here's what she did. She convinced first one woman, then two, then ten, then thousands of women to band together for peace. And the only way that they could cause peace to happen was to influence the men to do this and to get the men to negotiate. And the way that these women did it is they said, we want peace or else, and or else what? You're just women. You can't do anything. Well, these women agreed to withhold, as she said, their yum-yums from their husbands until the men put pressure on whoever the men in power were to agree to negotiate and come to peace. So,
oh, is that cool.
Is that funny or what? And it worked. It worked. The men finally got tired of it and said, hey, I can't, you know, my wife is, you know, won't be my wife in that way until we have peace. So have peace. I can't take this anymore. And it worked, and it also helped get Charles Taylor, this terrible dictator, out of power there. And it's just because she thought outside of the box, she determined that, you know, yes, we need peace. I, as one woman, can't, but gosh, I, with thousands of women, can. And they did, and they did. And there's so many examples like that. And sometimes, you know, it might be if you are an influencer, if you're the kind of person who can go out there, inspire you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of people like Obama, he's definitely somebody to unite and inspire, then you should do that. And even if you're not the kind who can go out and, you know, say, lead in that way, there's lots of other examples of people just by their sole example did indeed inspire lots of change.
Absolutely.
If I can just share another quick story, there's a young man who's probably not a leader per se. His name is Emmanuel Yeboah, and he is from, I think it was Ghana. And this kid was essentially born without, I think, his right leg. And in Ghana, at least at that time, if you were disabled in some way like that, probably you were going to be a beggar on the street. Just there, you know, no opportunity for people who were disabled, no school, probably all kinds of things. And he decided, and his mother was strong enough to say, you know, you're not disabled, you're not a beggar, you're meant to do more. And she planted those seeds, and she died when he was young, but he kept that with him. And so as he grew older, there's this amazing story of how he decided he was going to ride a bicycle across Ghana to bring attention to the needs of the disabled in Ghana. And he wrote these letters to all these organizations. Finally, some organization gave him the money for a bicycle. And with his one leg, and how you ride a bike with one leg, I don't know, but he did. He rode it across, you know, these dirt roads in Ghana. We don't have all the support that, say, a Lance Armstrong would have riding across country, just this young teenager. And he started getting this following, and people would find out, oh, he's coming, you know, Emmanuel's coming, and groups would follow him, and, you know, I think kids would run alongside his bike for a while they did this. And word spread, and it spread until it got to, I think there's a king, something like that, in a royal palace. And Emmanuel, a disabled, an unclean person, disabled people were considered unclean, was invited into the palace, and this was huge. And then from that, they actually started making laws that started protecting people, saying, yeah, people who have disabilities have rights to education, have rights to jobs, have rights to, you know, all the other things that the rest of us do. And just by being an example, just by showing himself and saying, hey, I'm disabled, but look, I can ride a bicycle. I'm a person. I'm a human being, and I can, you know, I can contribute too. Massive, massive change for thousands of people has come about. This happened, you know, maybe just 10 years ago in Ghana. So by our example as an individual, and if we can, by inspiring others who are also, will also go out and inspire, the possibilities of change are limitless.
That is huge. And you're right, it's just by your example sometimes that you can really make changes happen. And I think every one of us has that opportunity. And living in this Web 2.0 world that we live in today, I think we have an even bigger opportunity than we've ever had at any point in history to do those kinds of things. Because we have our blogs that we can use. We've got tools like Facebook and YouTube and MySpace and places where in making any changes or leading by example, people can now find us and see the kinds of change that we're inspiring. And that's enormous. We never had the opportunity to put those kinds of tools into action before. In using the formula that I teach for blogging, you can reach 1 to 5,000 unique people per day. Well, that's as much as 150,000 people per month. That's well over 1 million people per year. In reaching that many people every single year, even if you're just setting good examples, that message is going to get out there, and people are going to pick up on it and do bigger things with it. It doesn't take you actually going out and changing the whole world by yourself.
Absolutely. Wow, that is over 1 million.
Well, I just put a note in on our chat. If you've got a great story about change or a good example that you'd like to share with us, either raise your hand in the panel, or if you're in the chat, feel free to type it in, and I'll gladly read it here on the air.
And to raise your hand, you just need to push 1 on your telephone.
There you go. We love participation on this show, and anytime we can get our callers involved, I think it's a much better show in the end. It was great having Rhonda Delbaccio with us last week. to help talk about stories, because that's really what we're doing today. We're just telling stories.
Absolutely, absolutely. She was amazing. I bet she has hundreds of, maybe probably thousands of stories that she uses all the time to inspire people in the businesses and in life. Absolutely.
Well, and Rhonda is a story herself. Okay, who do we have with us today? Area code 417.
This is Rhonda.
Yay!
I didn't say
I saw the area code and thought it might be you.
It was so much fun. Yeah, well, it's nice to hear someone saying wonderful things about me, but what it really is, yes, I love hearing the stories that you're sharing, and it's so powerful. And the thing about sharing a story is that it really does help us to go past our preconceived notions. You told this story about the young man on the bicycle who was considered unclean in his culture and changed that through action. And indeed, the stories, but it's through our actions that we create the change. Everything has to be something where we set a spark and someone else must carry it.
Oh, that's a great way to talk about it. It really is. It's igniting that one little spark and then just passing the baton on with the spark still lit.
Absolutely. And Gina, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, that with the power of the Internet today, we really can affect so many more people than perhaps we used to be able to. What amazes me about that and what is exciting, and I'm glad you did the numbers, that if we grow, you know, have a grow readership from maybe 100 to 1,000 to 5,000 people per day, which works out to 1.8 million people per year. That's a huge number of people, and it's been fun to sort of follow your process and see the numbers of people coming to growing who want to come and find out what I have to talk about and to see, yeah, it is possible without being, you know, maybe a Fortune 500 CEO or a president of a country to influence a huge number of people if we set the intention to do so. And that spark will grow and it will catch and it will start lighting the flames of other people. And we can have a much bigger impact than many of us previously thought we could.
And really the easiest way to do that is just by telling stories, as Rhonda teaches at ProfitableStorytelling.com. Just by telling stories, you are passing that spark along from one person to the next. And, Rhonda, you know, the one thing we didn't get a lot of time to talk about last week, we talked about your core story more than anything else.
Right.
But we didn't get a lot of time to talk about other kinds of stories that can help make an impact. Maybe we can talk about that now since you're here.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the people that I love who talks about impact, of course, is Ken MacArthur.
Oh, same here.
He wrote the book Impact, and his book was chosen as one of the 10 top business books of 2008 recently, which is exciting. But what he does with impact is what happens is a lot of times we tell a story and we do our thing, but there's no real organization or no plan around it. And just as you teach a plan for blogging and for building traffic and for getting visitors through these specific steps, he does that same type of thing around impact. So anyway, I just have to mention him because of how he does it in a very systematic fashion. He has cracked the code for how to create impact in his book.
Oh, great. And do you know what that system involves?
Yes, it involves a number. I do. I read his book. I helped to coach him as he was writing it. So,
well, there you go.
It definitely, you know, part of it involves this. Certainly, the story is the spark, and then what it is. And actually, this is a piece that I teach in a lot of ways around storytelling. Is then you teach and share. You get a specific, memorable spark that's easy to repeat and easy to remember. It's kind of like playing operator. You know, a chain of 100 people, and if I say, you know, blue cats dance on the ceiling, and that's how I want it to come out at the end, well, but you pick a message, and you want it to stay pure to whatever it was. So it has to be easy, it has to be repeatable, it has to be memorable. And then, of course, you have to find a systematic way of getting the message out using the mavens, using the ones who are going to talk about it, using the media that are going to naturally help you to spread this message. And, of course, the things you're talking about through relationship marketing, social networking, and blogging are all terrific ways to do that.
Absolutely. And so it's just a matter of coming up with that repeatable story. I think all of us have probably played operator, or some people call it elephant, where you're getting together in a small group and you're whispering a story to the next person in the group. Ben Mack does a neat thing that he calls the clipboard test that's similar to this. Because what you've always seen when you play that game is by the time you get to the last person in the group, that story has totally changed, even if it's just one or two words. It does not usually sound the same as it did when it started. What Ben Mack talks about doing is anytime he's trying to come up with something that he wants people to remember, whether it's the name of a product, the name of a business, a slogan, he takes a clipboard with him. He goes out to the mall. Now, the clipboard's just there for show. Just makes you look more official. He'll take some notes, but it's not there for a real purpose other than to make you look official. And he goes up to people one at a time, asking if he can borrow 10 seconds of their time. And he always gets permission first. And then he simply asks them to repeat three phrases, one of which is that name that he wants them to actually get across. And he watches for how they repeat it. Do they get the right words out? Do they kind of snicker and giggle? Do they laugh? Do they go, huh? And look like they just can't figure it out, trying to figure out what he's talking about? Or do they really have a positive reaction as they're repeating it? And after he interviews about 100 people or so, getting that 10 seconds of their time, he has an answer as to whether or not this is a good name, slogan, brand, whatever he's trying to get to. So before you go putting a message out there, it's a good idea to test it with some people. So a lot of people, even 100 people will do, so that you can make sure that you really got the right message first before you start putting it out to the world. And I've seen some really awful messages in my days where by the time you get done looking at them, you can't figure out what they mean. And if people can't understand the message, number one, they're not very likely to pass it on. Number two, they're not going to get the meaning behind it when they do pass it on. So what you're saying is take that message and then craft a story around it. Right, Rhonda?
Yeah, and when you're trying to be memorable, repeatable, and you want to get people involved, you're going to have, there will be certainly the story of all these things that are going on, you know, like you think of with a million clicks for peace, there's all these different things people can do. But the core thing has to be very simple, very repeatable, so someone can understand and they either want to get on board or they don't and they know right away. And as they get involved, then they can become more involved with the depth of the story. But in terms of spreading something around, you want to make it as simple and repeatable. And I call it the bumper sticker test, but it's essentially the same thing that Ben Mack is talking about. If you saw this on a bumper sticker, would you remember it when you got home?
Gotcha. That's a good thought.
No, really essentially the same thing. And the best way to test it, and this, and actually do this with people, if you're choosing a web domain or if you're choosing a moniker, it's the same type of thing. Get a few people to repeat it. And if you were going to say, you know, blah-de-da.com, somebody better spit that exactly back at you. If you're picking a domain or if you're telling a story, you want something quick enough to spread so that in that couple of seconds, there can be the invitation, tell me more if somebody's interested.
Exactly. Exactly. And if they can't get it right when you do that with, you know, a small group of people, don't expect that message to spread when you really put it out to the world.
Right.
No, it just won't happen. And once you've got that message put together, if you're really sharing stories that are examples that can set good examples for other people, and then you go out and use all of these Web 2.0 tools that we have at our disposal, because I really see a blog as being a tool, that message is going to take on a life of its own.
Yes.
Whether you're actively doing something about it or not, it's going to happen.
Right.
Simply by using those tools. And I think that's really the message of today's show. If you really see that it is a privilege to be a part of change, you can go out and create that change on your own simply by making these little itty-bitty little efforts. I don't think they're very big at all. Rhonda, do you have any great stories that you've heard of people making change happen?
Oh, all kinds of things.
I had a feeling.
I mean, all kinds of different things. And, you know, it's often, sometimes, let me just first say, sometimes people get caught up in thinking, well, who am I? I can't really do that very much because I'm one person. And so often it's the littlest things, the smallest actions, you know, that are going to make a huge impact and be a part of that greater story and hook you into it. So you don't have to do everything. You can't do everything anyway. And it's just in spreading a small message. And I think of, I started chatting with somebody back and forth on Twitter the other day. And I talked about, we're talking about being a living blessing to people. And we made up a little phrase that was the number sign and bless for people to use. And it's not about religion or anything specific, any particular path, but it's about that. And it's really funny. I'm starting to see people who weren't in on that initial conversation starting to use that, who feel like they want to do something to be a blessing. And they'll just put number sign bless in front of something. That's very small. I can't wait to see what happens in a year. You know, yeah, just that little thing of if you have no matter what particular, you don't have to have a religion, it's nothing specific like that, it's just if you feel like you want to be a blessing, to be a gift to people, that you can use that sign on Twitter. And it's just funny to see that just in the very beginnings of starting to spread. I think of, I can't
so
think
you
of
just
it.
Put a plus sign in front of it or at the end of it?
It's the number sign and the word bless.
Oh, okay.
You know how they do those number sign things? Well, ours is number sign bless, and I checked it out. Nobody else was using it. So I said, oh, well, let's just call it this. And I start to see other folks using it, and it's fun. I think of the guy who started the hugs, where he had the sign that, you know, he would give people a hug. And he's somebody who just started off to do his thing. Now it's become a movement. Now it's become organized.
Wow.
You know, and so he just started off doing his thing. Captured the attention of a music group who just loved what he was doing, and then, you know, and Ken MacArthur talks about that in his book Impact, by the way. But, you know, it's just like he didn't have any anything else in mind other than to spread some hugs in his local area. Now it's become there are places that people go all over the world and put up their sign and give out free hugs. It was the free hugs guy, so and give out free hugs and. You know, it's just really neat to see those kinds of things. Those are the small actions. He puts out a sign and says free hugs, and some people, of course, no, don't touch me. But some people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the ones who it's right for, they do, and they continue to spread the message. And that's the same for all of us. Not everyone's going to do whatever it is. But if we do a simple action that's repeatable and that's easy to duplicate, that makes all the difference.
Is that chickens I hear in the background?
Yeah, I'm outside and my chickens, because some of them just ran up to me.
That's really funny.
They are so funny.
You guys are funny. Whoops. I'm sorry, lady. I didn't know you were coming out. There you go.
No, it's interesting. We're talking today about intentionally, you know, creating a message that that somehow inspires other people to do something. And the reverse side of the other side of the coin is, you know what, we make an impact on people whether we intend to or not. And
right.
We can make an impact that we don't intend to unless we're conscientious of it.
Right.
And for example of huge differences made just by that. One really cool story I read about way back when was the story of Edison, Thomas Edison. When he was a little boy, he was homeschooled off and on with his mom. And among other things, he shares the story of when he was real little, maybe 3 years old, 2 or 3 years old, and he's helping to set the table for breakfast. He's carrying the pitcher of milk. As he's, you know, reaching up, you know, and reaching up with his little hands to put it on the table, he drops it, and it spills all over the floor. And, of course, in those days, it's not easy to get, you know, a pitcher of milk. They probably had to, you know, go out and milk the cow for an hour to get it. But what his, the way his mom reacted to him was an example of something that set the tone for his life and who he was. Instead of getting angry at him, she said, well, you know, the milk's already spilled, darn. And first, this was, she realized, she said, well, since you're little, she said, would you like to play in it first? Which I don't think most moms would do that. But she did that, realizing he's little, since we have to clean up anyways. And then she said, okay, we have this problem. The milk is spilled. Should we clean it up with a rag or with a mop? And he picked whatever he picked. But the point that she made there was challenges will come, and there's always a way to get around them. And Thomas Edison grew up to be one of the greatest minds, you know, we've ever known in this country. And I'm sure the reverse side of that kind of parenting many of us have seen, and I certainly did in a lot of work I used to do with, you know, kids in foster care and whatnot, is parents who would belittle their kids for every little mistake that they made. And what happens is you, without intending to have a, by not specifically intending to have a positive impact, you can do the reverse and do the reverse damage. And we see, you know, kids who grow up into adults who are too afraid to do anything because they think they'll make a mistake and who are extremely defensive, et cetera. But on the other side of that coin, if we decide to inspire somebody to say, hey, it's okay to make mistakes, or hey, when you make mistakes, there's going to be a solution to it, we can inspire people like Thomas Edison. And I think that's just amazing. That's just amazing by intentionally saying, hey, I'm going to make a positive impact in the little ways as well as the big ways as I go throughout my day-to-day life.
It is. And it's like we've been saying, it doesn't take a lot. It just takes, you know, some concentrated effort more than anything else. Just some concentrated effort. So, if someone really has been inspired to make change happen as a result of listening to this show or watching the inauguration today, what should they do? Where should they go from here?
If they've been inspired to make a change, where should they go from here? I think the first thing is to decide that, yeah, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of making a change. And then looking inside, I think we have to look inside of ourselves and say, what's important to me and what am I good at? And looking at whatever it is that we are good at and the things that are important to us and saying, okay, how can I use that to make a bigger difference? Some of us are going to be our great storytellers. Some of us are great mathematicians. Some of us are great, you know, great with our hands and, you know, architectural engineers, whatever. But whatever it is, each and every one of us has a gift that we can use to somehow have an impact. And I think if we ask ourselves, okay, these are my gifts, these are my passions, how can I use that to impact even just one person? And we sit quietly and wait for the answer to come. I think it'll come. And I think that's the starting point. And then, of course,
and I wouldn't say even just one person. I would say only one person, because it all starts with that one person. But otherwise, really great answer, Jonathan. And Rhonda, what would you suggest?
Pick something that, yes, starting to want to be a part of the change is great. Pick one thing. In fact, I just wrote that. I have something I do every day on Twitter that's called Today's Question. So today's question is, what one thing can I change in my life? Pick one thing. And just starting with that, and if I can take that one thing and bring it out to touch somebody's life, then great. Because as we touch one person, that person is going to touch at least 1,000 lives. At least.
You do this every day on Twitter now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize you did that. I'll have to start watching for that.
It's number sign, the number sign or the pound sign, and then today's, and I have a question mark, today's question. But it's T-O-D-A-Y-S question mark. And you can look for those. I've done those for about the last week or so. And, yeah, there's just one little question every day that people can retweet. Ask yourself it and retweet it to your fans. And I'm at the Story
like
Lady on Twitter.
What kinds of questions have you been asking, Rhonda?
What kinds of questions have I been asking? I ask a question like, what one bad habit can I improve today? I've asked, what can I do to make someone smile today? You know, just they're different things. What can I do to
to make someone's life easier today. They're questions like that where they're fairly short questions, but they can be deep. And my hope is that people will take those, think about them, spread them around to your followers, and just use that as a way of getting people to reflect a little bit and create wonderful things in the world.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. Rhonda, that's a great example of just planting lots of seeds. Lots
yes.
of seeds of change. I think that's so cool. I'm so happy
you're well, and it's a great example of somebody making change happen.
Right. I put a positive tweet every morning, and somebody wrote back and said, I always love your positive tweets. I said, and I hope you'll retweet them to your followers, not because I have any ego in it. There's no product involved. It's just, if you find it useful, spread it to your people and spread a blessing and spread something positive. And it's amazing.
And if I know my listeners, they're going, retweet, what are you talking about?
So to retweet is to copy or spread a message. And if you see RT and then like at the story lady and then something or other, that's a retweet. That means this message was so good, I copied it and I'm sending it forward to my followers. So like if I have 1,700 followers and I put something that I think is cool out there, and Gina, you have however many you have, and you go, gee, that was cool, retweet at the story lady today's question. What one thing can I change in my life today? That means all of my followers get it and all of your followers get it, some of whom are my followers, but some are not. And if they didn't see it the first time, they might see it the second time or whatever. And someone else may go, gee, that was really cool, and they can keep spreading those little sparks around.
Well, and as we talked about that day that we were talking about LinkedIn on this show,
uh-huh.
it's really something that can reach a huge number of people easily. That day on the show, I don't think you were on, Rhonda, we looked at my LinkedIn account. And at the time, I had 147 followers on LinkedIn. That was just my direct people that I was connected to. Because of those 147 people, the next level down had me connected to more than 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the third level down had me connected to 3.4 million people.
Isn't that remarkable?
So it's huge. So if you've got 1,700 people and you put a tweet out, and I've got almost 1,500 and I retweet it, well, now there's just the two of us, but now we've just reached out to 3,200 people. And we keep doing that with even 10 people, we can easily reach 50,000 people.
Right. Exactly. And it's so powerful, and they're short messages, and you know, that's just one great way to use social media. If you have something that's near and dear to your heart, and I probably ought to do this every day. I love the Animal Rescue site, and I go and click on their link every day and feed food to some shelter animals. Probably I could set up a tweet about that every day. Hey, be sure to feed a dog today for free, one click. Put that link out there, and other people who like animals maybe will pick it up and start doing it, and it probably would help that charity.
That's a great idea. And, you know, I just had another thought. When you're tweeting, if you've got your Twitter account tied to your Facebook account.
Of course
so
I do.
In your Facebook, I know you do, so do I. In your Facebook account, at the top of your profile, when it asks, what are you doing right now, it can take your tweets and put them right in there. Well, it's really not the 1,700 followers on Twitter that you're reaching. You're reaching those 1,700 plus how many friends do you have in Facebook?
1,200 there plus a bunch of people on Pluxo and LinkedIn and my blog log and friend feed and all those
and
places.
All of those reach out. So each time you tweet, you're reaching more like 6,000 or 7,000. And
likely.
If I then retweet it, I'm reaching out to more than 10,000 through all of my different things. Wow. When you get 10 people to retweet it, you're talking not just 50,000, but probably a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Enormous.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it grows really, really, really fast. That's what
and
I love about SubSuo.
Yeah, you never know the reach. You don't know all. None of us knows all the lives that we touch with any spark that we put out. But it's just amazing how quickly it grows. And when you do hook up all of your various services, you've got FriendFeed and Twitter and Facebook and whatever all else that's all hooked up, Pluxo and LinkedIn and all those things, it's truly amazing how quickly it can grow. Also, ecademy.com, you can hook up your services through that and then get all those folks too.
Wow. Well, I like taking my friend feed and putting it right on a page on my blog. So if you go to fggg.com/where's Gina, that's a summary feed. It's my friend feed, which takes all the different services, including my Flickr and my Facebook and my Twitter and you name it, it goes into there. And it puts it all into one single feed. And at the top of the page, I even have this little map that people can log in to see exactly where I'm located.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see pictures that I've taken from along my way on my trip. They can actually take a satellite and zoom in and see what's going on around me, plus all of those other feeds. Well, all of those different feeds have different numbers of people that are watching, plus the people watching my blog. And it's a great way to really get people back to my blog because it's just a page on my blog and it's easy for them to click from one place to the other. And anybody can go grab that stuff for free through FriendFeed.
Yep, I have that too. My page is my About Me page, basically. And it's really nice to have that. Make it so easy for people to find what you're doing or to find you on whatever network they like.
And that's really just building the relationship further. It's just a great way of being able to let people know who you are for real, as opposed to only hearing about you and the products you're selling. You're no longer just selling people, you're really serving them, letting them get to know you. And in turn, you should be getting to know them. As people are following you and whatnot, make the time to go and check out their profiles, check out what they're doing. And you will find that you're going to run into people that you really are in sync with, because that's who you're going to attract naturally anyway. I bet you every one of us taking the time or making the time to do that, we can also find people that we can reach out to help make a bigger impact. I know I do every time I go into my Facebook account. It blows me away, some of the people who contact me. But I don't make the time to do that often enough. I should be doing it every day. I might do it once a week. And by the time I get around to doing it, there's like 800 messages in there. So if I made the time to do it more frequently, I could actually reach out and interact with more of those great people who are contacting me. And that's going to be true for every person who goes out and actively uses all of these Web 2.0 tools to make a bigger difference, to build relationships, and to have a bigger impact. And the only difference between any one of us and Barack Obama is the amount of impact that he's making. He is now the most powerful man on this planet. But power isn't impact. They're different. He's just had an opportunity to go out and touch greater quantities of people at one time. That doesn't mean that any one of us can't have as great of an impact in our own way, maybe not in a political way, maybe in a different way, simply by going out and starting by changing one person's life. So who should we have on next week, Jennifer?
Gina, we have a lot of great people. One of whom, either next week or the week after, we've talked about Second Life and making an impact using the power of the Internet. So I know some folks who are making huge impacts in business and otherwise using Second Life, that virtual world. And I think they'll be a lot of fun.
I can't wait.
A ton of fun. That still blows my mind, what people are doing with this imaginary world. So the folks from Second Life. And then there's some other people who are making impacts in the real world by connecting, by inspiring, and I'd like to bring some of them on and show how they, in their business and their personal life, are using relationship marketing to make a big impact. Lots and lots of examples. So we'll be bringing some really fun guests.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to make for some great shows. Second Life. Oh, I can't wait for that one, especially because I am dying to pick their brains a little bit. There's so many possibilities in Second Life, and I don't think I've even covered the tip of the iceberg. Every time I log in there, and I was in there just last week, every time I log in there, they make so many changes inside of Second Life because they're constantly improving it. I have to go refigure out everything because it's growing so fast. I am just amazed at how fast that site has grown.
Yeah.
Really, really surprising and great to see, because I think that's where the internet is going. We're moving from this Web 2.0 world to a more virtual world that's really Web 3.0. The analysts are saying that it could be as soon as 2010 that the internet has moved into more of a virtual reality setting as the Web 3.0 world. Well, that's only another year from now.
It blows my mind, because I've shared with you before, I've always seen virtual worlds as video games before, something I wasn't really interested in, something that kids and big boys who held on to their toys like to play. But the more I learned about Second Life, I mean, there are tons of genuine business on there. I don't know how many, but there are several millionaires who've made, more than $1 million just through this virtual Second Life, as well as talking about making impact, what people are using it for, social movements as well. And you can go in there and actually, pack an auditorium or a stadium, and you can invite people, and people will actually come in there as their little virtual selves, and you can, speak or share your message on whatever it is, whether it's your business or, something like 10 million clicks for peace or, the movement in Liberia. It's amazing what people are doing.
Well, and there's close to 25 million users in Second Life now, so you've got a potential audience of up to 25 million people. We're not talking about going out and just touching a couple hundred. It's huge. And even the big companies are recognizing it today. Procter & Gamble, Dell Computer, Nike, even Motorola. They all have a presence inside of Second Life because there are so many people there that they can reach.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Amazing.
It is. And it's a totally different level. Instead of just having this flat world that Web 2.0 provides, where it's real time, but it's not really real time, it's really real time inside of Second Life. It's to the minute. It's not you make a comment and then later somebody else comes by and makes a comment and you're doing it at different times. You're really interacting at a whole new level when you're inside of a virtual reality world like Second Life.
You know what will be interesting is, it's very interactive. It'll be interesting. Right now, I forget how you control the Second Life, because I haven't been in there recently. But, you can use the click of a mouse and an arrow and whatnot. But at some point, I bet lots of money, they'll integrate the whole, they have those interactive video games now where either there's a camera that sees your body movement and then it replicates that in the video game. Or
yeah.
Those games like the Wii that, you move the whatever the joystick or the thing is around and it moves it in there. And I bet sooner than later they're going to integrate those kinds of things into virtual worlds like Second Life.
They've been working on it for over a year in Second Life.
Oh, have they? Have they? Are they playing with that? I bet it's coming out.
I know they want to bring an application for it out. I know it's not out yet, but the first time I heard about the article was around Christmas of 2007. It was right at the time that they had come out with the audio, because for the longest time they didn't even have audio available inside of Second Life. Even that's only about 13 or 14 months old. So it grows really fast, and that's the thing about the internet. Talking about change, if we're going to have a presence online that we use for our business, it also means that you need to start being able to anticipate change, because the changes occur so fast that if you're only reactive to them, by the time the change takes place, you react to it, and then you implement, you're months down the road. And you miss that whole first wave when people are really taking root with whatever the application is and the strongest relationships are coming out of it. So you've got to be able to be in a position of anticipating what changes are occurring down the road so that you can be more proactive and less reactive. Now, doing that is going to mean that you're going to take some action that may need to change down the road when the real thing comes out, or that you take some action and it ends up becoming something that isn't going to happen and you got to go in a different direction. But you're still in a much better position if you're taking a corrective course action plan of being able to capitalize on the change as it occurs.
I like that corrective course. That brings to mind the way that they fly airplanes. You know, you think you simply fly from route A to route B, but as we're told that pilots, in order to do that, they're constantly correcting. And even though they know generally speaking where they want to go, it's not as simple as from here to there. You constantly have to correct. But by being aware of where you want and of where you're at and constantly correcting and getting back on route, then you will reach your goal and get to your destination.
That term, corrective course action plan. It's not my own term. It's a term that David Valliere is the one that actually started talking about it a couple of years ago. And he actually took it from aviation. That's what pilots call their flight plan, is a corrective course plan.
There you go.
You've got to be clear on that destination. You've got to be clear on the outcome. And you've got to be clear on where you're starting and what you want to achieve along the way. But once you've got those pieces in place, now you want to be in a position where you're not so rigid, where you can really anticipate changes and take and make changes quickly so that you can get the biggest results down the road. And stories are a great way to do that, too. Aren't they, Rhonda?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't know if I was still live, but yes, absolutely.
Well, once I bring you on, I never mute you out.
Okay. Yeah, stories really are. And it's all that connection. I mean, I have not played with Second Life. I think, well, that sounds kind of cool, but goodness sakes, I can hardly keep up with what I have to do now. So, but, yeah, and that's all about a story. That's about creating a whole other reality. And really the story of us becoming what we're meant to be and do what we're meant to do is the story of each of us becoming something that we're not. And it's always, I believe that pilots spend about 90% of their time off course, if what I heard was accurate.
Heard that same thing, so it must be right around that number.
Probably around that 90%, 90%. That means that almost all of the time they're going, oh, well, here this is going on, and that's these wind conditions and these conditions here and there, and they're adapting and dealing with that. So, you know, any of us have to realize for ourselves it's going to be that same type of thing. We're going to be doing some course correction, and it's okay if you're doing a lot of course correction as long as you're finding the way.
And as long as you've got a clear focus on that end destination. That's the thing. They may be off course 90% of the time, but they still end up at the right place every time.
Right.
So, I mean, that's really the clear message in it. As long as you end up at that destination, and that's why it's so important to plan where that destination really will be for you in your life and your business. If you're not clear on it, if you don't carefully define it, you're going to end up with something that may not make you happy in the end. And at that point, there's not a lot you can do about it. You're already there. Now you got to set a new course and go do it all over again. But if you really clearly set that destination, that outcome, with everything that will make you happy in it, no matter whether you're off course 90% of the time or 99% of the time, you can still get to that destination in the end.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that, Rhonda. That was great. Well,
we've got
about a minute left, so I want to say thank you to everyone who's been here today. I know I personally am going to have the inauguration on in the background all day today, which is something I don't do a whole lot. But it's just such an exciting time. I hate missing even a minute of it. So I hope everyone has been inspired here today to go out and make a difference in just one person's life. However big or how small, that's up to you. I encourage you to use your blog, use the Web 2.0 sites that are there, like Twitter and Facebook and all of the myriad of other sites, to really do something for one person and share with that person that you want them to go out and pass that on to just one more person. And together, we can make a difference in this world. So thank you so much to everyone for being here today. We'll be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern at askggg.com/radio for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101.
Have a great week, everybody.
Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next week.